stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No!
Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
And now, a moment of silence for the lost groundhog. Thank you. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. You are the world champion! Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 144, 12 squared, may the good Lord help us all, of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbour, that's Mr. Andre Harrison, and we are back for a double header this week. First up will be this episode, taking on, well, the 2018 Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal and the IndyCar DXC Tech 600 at Texas as well. Fun times for all involved. Well, maybe more for Texas, not so much for Canada, which, well, it certainly existed. We'll say that much. With me to suffer through the next hour or so, well, at least for the Canada bit anyway, is Mr. Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Yep, I had the glorious... enjoyment of not having to watch the race live, so I only saw the highlights.
Yeah, was it like 60 seconds long? Like, was a 60 second version on Twitter enough for you?
Somehow they were able to pad it out to a 5 minute video.
How? Like, with what? That's all I want to know. It's like, oh, jeez. I've not seen said highlight video. I want to know, like, what content they had to pad out. Like, what was the podium celebration included in full? Like, is that it?
Nope.
Oh dear, the pain indeed. And in the other corner of the room, representing Nashville, Tennessee, as always, Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Hi, I'm back. I'm very much back. Yes. I first of all, I want to say thank you to everybody who said nice things over the last week or so. Of course, you know, with my grandmother passing away and me having to be away from the last episode due to funeral services, which, you know, it was a lot of travel, it was a lot of emotion, and I'm just glad to be back. And I think a lot of people had said, you know, my grandmother was always very proud of the work that I did, so that was really, really awesome. You may have noticed I did my hair up again. It's instead of blue, it's now purple. That was my grandmother's favorite color. So just something that I want to do from her. It doesn't help that it doesn't hurt either that, you know, everybody seems to like it.
Purple is one of those colors you can never go wrong with, my friend. Take it from me. It's a pleasure to have you back, sir. Before we get into episodes 144, 145, places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. You can follow us on Twitter @motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow our personal handles, you can catch us @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, that's with two Ks. Tweet him your struggles about being a KTM factory rider in MotoGP 18. He's loving it at the moment.
Oh my God.
And @RJ O'Connell. You can check us out on the website now at motorsport101.com. Yes, I still haven't gotten bored of calling it .com yet. It's great. Including a new piece from me up there talking about, well, biking in general and the silliest of silly seasons, which you'll hear more about most likely if you listen to Bike Live this past week. More on that in a second. But if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. And in epic response to the fact we have safeguarded multiple last questions from him in mailbag editions, shout out to James Kalantis, who's pledged $10 in his and is now a Patreon backer of ours. Thank you very much, James. Much appreciated, sir. That's very generous of you. Don't worry, we will tackle your question in a future episode. We haven't forgotten. It's in our likes. We don't put very many in the podcast Twitter because we don't have very big social lives. But if you like us on that, you can back us there on that. $10 gets you access to our Discord server. $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live. Now, as it's actually gone live in the last hour or so, Bike Live episode 63 is now up and available. Reclaiming the Land. It is a review of all the MotoGP action at Mugello this past weekend. As for the first time in, well, 24 attempts on the Ducati, Jorge Lorenzo wins. it's actually gotten to be kind of a surprise on this occasion. So yeah, we'll talk about how Jorge Lorenzo shocked the world twice in basically 4 days, because not only did he win that Mugello race, he's also now a member of the Repsol Honda team for next season, which, that's a doozy. A combination of Marc Marquez and Jorge Lorenzo in the same team. Kids, that's what we call terrifying.
Come on, Mercedes. Sign Sebastian. Don't be cowards.
Don't be cowards. Or in other words, just don't be a team boss that likes Danny Pedrosa very much, clearly. Either works. So yeah, we'll be talking all about the city season updates regarding Jorge Lorenzo, Danilo Petrucci, others in there as well. Obviously, Andretti Iannone going to Aprilia, and Joan Mir being confirmed to go to Suzuki today. So the average age of the Suzuki factory team as of right now is 22 years old. Combined, they're only 3 years older than Valentino Rossi. It's a terrifying thought, if you ask me. So all of that and much more in episode 63. Don't worry, check out the episode 64 later in this week, where we will be talking about World Superbikes at Brno, as Alex Lowe's finally broke the duck and got his first World Superbike win. Shout out to Rebecca James on that one. She's been waiting years for this day. That and Jonathan Ray taking history as he gets his 60th World Superbike victory, breaking Carl Fogarty's all-time wins record. And
he's coming back to put it out of reach, baby.
He is indeed. And yeah, and the slightly controversial incident of the Kawasaki's taking each other out, essentially, during race two, which led to a very sarcastic Jonathan Ray clapping on the sidelines as Tom Sykes rode past him. Jonathan Ray, new leader in the what I call the Petty Olympics, ladies and gentlemen. All of that and much more on Bike Live, episode 64, later this week. We already named it The Green Mist, for obvious reasons. No Tajiri, you don't need to be involved in this one. So, all of that, and without further ado, I can put it off no longer. Let's get into the Canadian Grand Prix after this quick musical interlude. Well, kids, I can sit here before you, leader of the Sebastian Vettel Internet Fraternity, and say, ha ha, win number 50. It is a beautiful thing. King, I propose a toast to our German brother.
And I'm just throw that cup right back across the room.
How dare you? You secretly want a part of this bandwagon, King. You just don't know it yet.
It's funny that you mentioned cups in Montreal. That's a thing they haven't seen since 1993.
Oh, oh dear. Congratulations, by the way.
Charles.
We
love you.
Congratulations to the Washington Capitals for that Stanley Cup victory, by the way. Alexander Ovechkin, yes, celebrating with the cup has been nothing short of glorious.
Yeah. He's been living his best life, and I'm absolutely here for it.
Man, there's so many side stories to that celebration that are just hilarious.
The hilarity of Ovechkin's missing teeth, the playoff beard was a beautiful thing.
The rest of his team forgetting that they had won the cup for like 5 seconds because they saw something pressed up against the glass.
Yes, it was a pair of women's tits. That's one way to celebrate the Stanley Cup, I suppose. Or in this case, Stanley Cups.
Oh my god.
But also Golden State kind of just, you know, mollywopped Cleveland.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Golden State sweeps the Cleveland Cavaliers. Steph Curry wins his third championship. In my opinion, he was utterly robbed of MVP. That went to Kevin Durant for the second time in a row. But yeah, Cleveland gets swept. It was a doozy, and it was a beat 'em down for the ages. And it's never a good sign, King, when by the end of game two, LeBron looked like he looked like a beaten man by the end of game two. It really was. It wasn't pretty.
That's the face of a man who regrets living in Cleveland.
That's the face of a man who knows that he is going to just make so much money with the Lakers next year.
Yeah. Like, can you say hello to a $50 million Supermax, anyone? Anyone?
Yeah.
Tasty. Don't worry, LeBron. It's not all bad. Just figure it like the 2011 finals where you can go back and say, you know what, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm still going to be me. You know, like that time when Dallas kicked their asses too. I have no love for LeBron James, really. He's all right, but meh. Anyway, shall we talk about the Canadian Grand Prix?
Yeah. Let's do the thing.
Let's do the thing. I mean, it was kind of a weird weekend in the sense of I wasn't optimistic for this one because there was a lot of hype going in that Mercs were going to run their second power units of the season. They didn't. They were going to plan an engine upgrade. They've put that off to Paul Ricard in a couple of weeks' time. Yes, the French Grand Prix is back, in case you forgot. It was weird, King, because it was like Verstappen was like the man of the practice sessions again, and it was like, oh no, here we go. Like, the exoneration of Max Verstappen has begun.
Right, yes, Max Verstappen, who opened up the weekend by jokingly saying he wanted to headbutt the next person who called him out on his crashing, which I believe that was... wasn't that answered by somebody at the Daily Mail?
Yes, it was. That's like the least surprising part of that interview, that somebody gave him a shitty question that came from the Daily Mail, the beacon of British journalism. I said on Twitter at the time, everything about that question was a dumpster fire. Like, everything. The fact that it came from the Daily Mail, Verstappen's immature yet kind of understandable response, and the growing realization of, oh great, now the media's starting to turn on the guy they encouraged about 3 or 4 years ago to keep driving like a pillock. And now it's like, oh great, now he's gone too far. Reel him in, guys, reel him in! It's been a weird time if you're a Max Verstappen fan. Isn't that right, RJ?
It's been very weird. I don't know what to make of this. I don't know what to make of this Grand Prix. Everything looked good going into qualifying. We had the top six separated by 0.3 seconds.
Yeah, it was a great qualifying session.
Yeah, Canada always has some fun races, and then this one, King. We're gonna use a bit of a hockey analogy here since we talked about the Stanley Cup. You remember back in like the early to mid, like pre-lockout days?
Yeah.
When games were just very low scoring and it was just ugly. Nobody scored. The players were very sluggish, and games turned into like devolving, like 1-0, 2-0 fest, where everybody just dumps and chases the puck around for 55 minutes.
Yes, I remember that not fondly.
Yeah, it was basically like that, except there was no clutching or grabbing, because that would involve cars being close to one another, and just judging from the average intervals during the races, there was not going to be any close quarter contact or anything after the safety car drew.
Yeah, it quickly devolved into that quite soon. I mean, Sebastian Vettel took the pole by a smidgen over Valtteri Bottas in second. Another nice front row from him. Lewis Hamilton actually kind of mediocre by his standards on the back of the second row. And as RJ mentioned, only a third of a second covering the top six. It was like, ooh, hype, it's close at the front. And then it never really turned out that way during the race itself. I mean, the start was pretty electric. Verstappen tried an audacious outside pass on Valtteri Bottas, who I watched that and I said to my brother on the phone, I was like, how much do you want to bet Verstappen tries to go around the outside of turn two? And I was like, yep, there it is. he tried it, yep. Didn't quite put it off. Valtteri is such a hard man to pass, it's ridiculous. He knows how to get the elbows out, let's put it that way. They pile through sector one, and oh no, that's a wreck in the background, and that is Lance Stroll and Brendan Hartley in a big one. And luckily, both drivers okay. Brendan had to go to hospital for a once-over. He was okay. He was released the same night. Yeah. But
he had a CT scan. Mm. Someone had posted like a GIF of his onboard. Like the side of his head hit the halo.
Yeah, it was quite the whack, to say the least, on that one.
Ooh. Yeah, and this already coming after a pretty downtrodden week for Brendan Hartley when he found out that that Red Bull might have been shopping his seat.
Mm. Again, because it turns out that Toro Rosso had made an approach to McLaren saying, "Hey, can you do us a solid? And you know, if you want to get your boy some F1 experience, you can bring in Lando Norris for the rest of the season, and you know, we'll kick Brendan to the curb." McLaren were quickly too quick to reject that approach. If anything, I think they kind of rubbed salt in it when I think they came out and said something along the lines of, "Well, if an F1 team is approaching him, then that must mean that we think that they're as good as we think he is," which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, because we should mention the last time that Red Bull tried to loan a driver from a different young driver program. We know how well that turned out for, you know, the other team.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sebastian never came back.
Yeah, he got comfortable, shall we say. But yes, Brendan Hartley, I mean, the rumours were already strong regarding, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago after the Spanish Grand Prix wreck he had. Turns out, yeah, it's true. Toro Rosso are trying to get rid of him, which is shitty, to say the least. Cause, I mean, it was nice for Brendan because he out-qualified his, you know, more experienced teammate Pierre Gasly by half a second.
He did. He almost got in a Q3.
Yeah, Brendan Hartley was genuinely very good in qualifying. He was on for his best weekend, I think, in F1 to date. Had a good chance at the points. And it was yanked out from underneath him after about 30 seconds. Lance Stroll, I mean, people have been very quick to point fingers on that one. I think it's kind of 6-1, half a dozen of the other, in my humble opinion at least. Hartley was audacious to have his car there, but he had an entitlement to be there. Stroll just loses the rear, and after that he's a passenger at that point, and Hartley's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's how I look at it anyway. I wouldn't read too much more into it than that.
Since they're all okay, can we at least agree that Brendan Hartley deserves at least a combo multiplier for that sick wall ride?
50-50 grind, my friend. 50-50 grind. Yes. It's a shame for Brendan. I tweeted as well, like, you know, give that man another 3 ounces of bourbon. Because he's just having a miserable time at Toro Rosso right now, knowing that it's just nothing is going his way at the moment. That was a really strong weekend from Brendan, and then bang, just collected straight away. It wasn't great, poor fella. Yeah, Lance as well. I mean, that's a gutter as well. And I know Williams are not having the best of times, to say the least. But you know, home race, you know, special helmet design. Lance had come down for the weekend, and you know, he didn't even
had his own grandstand.
He had the Lance Stroll Canadian grandstand, and he never got to drive past it.
He didn't even make it to the grandstand in his name.
Oh. That just
things are just going bad for Williams.
Like, if that isn't a perfect like visual metaphor for Williams' season so far, then I don't know what is.
Well, Williams did get a W this weekend. They won the Great Wrath Race.
Fuck's sake!
The only win they're getting all year.
Yeah, I mean you're right.
They can still win like the Motorsport 101 Golden Cock later in the year.
Do you want to win that, though?
I think you do. I think it's very prestigious. And it's rock solid.
Oh my god.
But after the safety car pulled in, Sebastian got an excellent restart. And I can tell you now, the grand total of action we got after that was, ooh, look, Charles Leclerc has to defend from Fernando Alonso. He did that. And that was about it. I mean, we had one little minor scuffle as Sergio Perez turned in at turn one a little bit too early for the second time in 4 years.
Almost starting a second safety car, but, you know, Perez avoided to collect everybody else in front of him. Just ultimately would have to resort to finishing way down in 14th.
Yeah, they tried to put him in early and try to run the ultra soft tire to the end of the race. It didn't work. They forced Perez to take a two stopper, essentially, and he ended up finishing in 14th place. And I love that Sergio Perez after the radio call was like, he needs to be black flagged for that, you guys. And I'm like, Really? It's like, Checo, we're doing this again, are we? No. Stewards had a look at it. No further action. I think it was the right decision on that one. I mean, it quickly became a tale of two races. It was the top six, basically, in kind of their own mini race, and then everybody else on this one. I mean, the top six was actually fairly close in the end. There was a few tacticals, ifs and buts, but it was kind of the same old deal. Sebastian was clearly the fastest man in race trim this weekend, comfortably. Pulled out several seconds, only one stop. So Ferrari could have possibly botched the strategy this time. well, you say that, but they would find a way. But luckily, this time they didn't. King, it's very nervous being a Ferrari fan sometimes, you know. It's like you're waiting for them to shit the bed, and it's like, this time they didn't. I was very happy that they didn't do such a thing. But yeah, it was a little bit of back and forth between Vettel and Bottas. Bottas tried to reel him in the second half. Just didn't really happen. If anything, when trying to lap Carlos Sainz, he botched turn one and went over the curb and very nearly lost it. Very nearly went off completely into turn two. Yeah. That cost him 2 seconds, and that effectively ended the race from a competitive standpoint up the front. Lewis Hamilton, like, this is weird. Like, Lewis Hamilton is the king of Montreal. He has had 6 wins here. He's had 6 pole positions here. Limps to 5th place. And I know he was on, like, basically the last race he was going to run his power unit on. He complained earlier about random dropouts of power or some sort of engine cooling problem. Power unit cooling problem. Got to get that right. It's very important. Very important. Very. But yeah, he eventually would limp home to 5th. And King, I can't believe I'm openly admitting this, but your man's in that team might be the superior driver the way the season's played out, even if the scoreboard doesn't say so.
Really? A compliment? I'm so surprised.
Don't worry. I'm complimenting you while I'm setting your wagon on fire. I think it balances out.
Yes, it does.
You're welcome. Now, I hope you like barbecue. I have to say, like Valtteri just keep, like, I'm tired of the Valtteri disrespect. Like, I said this on Twitter on Sunday morning. I'm a bookies guy, so obviously I looked at the odds this morning, right? From the front row, right, Valtteri was 6-1 to win the race. And I was looking, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, he Lewis Hamilton had half the price of Valtteri Bottas starting 4th compared to Val starting 2nd. And I'm like, have you guys been watching this season? Like,
yeah, all Valtteri Bottas has to do is get a much better start than Vettel, and he could theoretically have sat on this race for about 68 laps. We'll talk about that shortly.
Yeah, that's not the normal number, amazingly. More on that later. But, I thought Val getting the 6-1 treatment, I thought, was ridiculous, especially starting from second on the grid, and especially given how well he's driven this season across the board. This was his 4th second place of the season. He's not won a Grand Prix this season, but he's finished in second, 4 times now. Got it the wrong way around.
And he's now moved up into 3rd place in the championship with his results.
It just makes you think what would have happened if Baku was not a thing, because he's 35 points behind Sebastian now in the championship standings, and Baku was such a body blow to his title hopes that it sucks. Instead of being a possible 33-point swing, it ended up being a zero for Val, and basically gift-wrapping Lewis an extra 7 points. Not fun, but that's F1 for you, folks. It wasn't pretty. But can we talk about Sebastian a little bit?
Let's talk about it. There have been 107 drivers to win a Formula One Grand Prix ever. Less than 4% of those people have ever won 50. Those are Michael Schumacher, Alan Prost, Lewis Hamilton, and now Sebastian Vettel.
It's an unbelievable achievement. I mean, even when Martin Brundle is coming out and saying it's an incredible achievement, that means a lot. 50 wins for Sebastian. It's 50th Grand Prix victory. Just one behind Alan Prost now for 3rd in the all-time wins list. It is ridiculous that he's got 50 wins. It doesn't feel like he's gotten as many as 50, to be honest with you. And this is coming from me, the Vettel fan in the corner. It doesn't feel like he's gotten 50, but then you realise, oh, wait, those Red Bull ones came in bunches. Big bunches. Yeah, it's like that was a practically flawless weekend from when it mattered in pole position to leading every single lap. That was awesome. Again, just the fourth man in history to have 50 Grand Prix wins. And now, back in the championship lead as well, which I can't believe I'm saying this, being Mr. Cynical regarding Ferrari this season, it doesn't feel like a fluke he's on top of the championship. I feel weird and dirty saying this. Like, oh my God. We're a third of the way in now, and it actually feels like Vettel should be ahead by more than a point. I feel really dirty saying this, King. Pour some water on me or something. Like, it
I don't
feels
have
like
any water, but we do have some Snapple in this mini refrigerator.
Drown me, like Daddy.
It feels like it's been a two-horse race for a long time, a lot longer than people are willing to admit it has been.
It's crazy because I looked at the Wikipedia the other day and I was like, Lewis Hamilton finishing fifth, that was his worst result of the season so far. Fifth. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be a hard season. That was the worst Lewis Hamilton has had this season and it was still a fifth place. Sigh. God damn you, Verstappen in China! Yes. 1 point between Vettel and Hamilton, a further the way in, and that dogfight is only going to get funny. Because, I mean, of all the Canadian Grand Prix Lewis Hamilton's had in his career, of all the times he's seen the checkered flag, this was his worst result in Canada, fifth place. He is a god round here. I have to say as well, a bit alarming, the top six of that Grand Prix finished within 26 seconds of each other. Also a bit alarming that Kimi Raikkonen was 26 seconds off his teammate in this race. Everyone else, a lap down or more. Yeah, the gap between the top six and everybody else was, a chasm.
Oh, yeah. It was nice to have optimism while it lasted. Mm-hmm. That's still solid points for Renault, who are now, they're now fourth in the Constructors' Championship. Mm-hmm. Like, they got a solid haul out of this. And what about Charles Leclerc? I said this during the race, if there was like a formal Rookie of the Year award, Charles Leclerc would probably get my first place vote.
Oh, well, what a bold gambit there, RJ. but yeah, you're quite right. I mean, Charles Leclerc held off Alonso brilliantly and then actually just cleared off. He pulled away from the McLaren driver before his unfortunate retirement. Yeah, happy 300, Fernando. yeah, an exhaust failure.
I'm going to choose some more glass now.
Yep. Yeah, best chassis on the grid, RJ. Best chassis on the grid, my friend.
Not only that, but just the sheer amount of horsepower that McLaren are getting from this far superior Renault power unit. So superior, in fact, that the both McLaren and Hondas almost missed out in Q1, if not for the fact that Romain Grosjean's car literally went kerblammo seconds into Q1, and Toro Rosso wheeled out an old-spec Honda for Pierre Gasly. They got out-qualified by Toro Rosso Honda.
In other words, besides that, RJ, everything's going well, isn't it?
Everything's fine. It's it's good. It's good. I have no complaints.
Says the dog whose house is currently on fire.
Where's the absinthe?
oh dear. Yeah, not the best weekend for Fernando on that one. Another DNF back-to-back thing. But again, as mentioned, Charles Leclerc beat him to turn one on their dogfight and then just took off into the distance. I mean, the fun fact is, I saw this the other day. This is credit to the F1 subreddit for this one. Like, Charles Leclerc has only had 7 F1 races to date, and he has already nearly matched Marcus Ericsson's entire points haul for Sauber since his debut 83 races ago.
Oh my god.
It's safe to say Charles Leclerc is very good in what equipment that he's been given. And in fairness, that Alfa Romeo Sauber, that's not as bad a car as it has been in years past.
No, I have to say, fair play to Sauber. It looks like a better car than we first imagined. We all had them as the bottom feeders on the grid this year. Strictly speaking, that doesn't really hold up so far. I guess, either that or Charles Leclerc is just driving on a godly level of existence. Not sure which one it is yet. Give me a couple more races to figure that one out. Another Charles Leclerc is going to be a megastar. That kid can drive. Shall we get into some of the other not so fun but also kind of fun stuff? First up, Romain Grosjean, murderer.
He's back to his 2012 race.
Oh god! Like, has anybody seen the uncensored video of said transgression?
Oh Jesus!
Yeah. Oh.
So he hits a groundhog. He hits a badger on the track. It's you only need to see it once.
Once is enough.
Like, I pretty much told a friend of the show, Patrick Hofstadter, I'm like, Pat, why is there so much liquid? Why is there so much liquid?
There's literally hog guts all over the hard camera. It's not pretty. I'm calling Peter.
But in the grand scheme of things, it caused a bit of issues at Haas because they're running a parts shortage right now.
Oh god.
Where they only had two front wings for the entire weekend.
Yeah, they basically had to tell their drivers, hey, don't crash. I don't think they factored groundhogs into the equation.
Or the exploding engine in Q1 that...
That
forced Grosjean to stop from the back.
That was a proper smoke screen. Everybody told us that they took smoking out of Formula 1. Oh my goodness, they were wrong. They were very, very wrong.
Wrong. Big blow up in Q1 for Grosjean to send him to the back. To be fair, a solid recovery from Grosjean to get it back into 12th in the end. Still, sadly, no points for the season for the poor Frenchman. He's doing his best, bless him. Also, a couple of things I've got to mention as well. Winnie Harlow was one of the guests of honour for Montreal this weekend, and she had the quote-unquote honour of waving the checkered flag to mark the end of the race, and oh no. Guys, she's done a Pelé. This is not good. She kind of waved the flag two laps early. This is kind of a problem.
I think we all have, a lot of us have strong feelings. Some people have very irrationally strong feelings about this.
Yes. Let's just say people got very mad at Winnie Harlow for this. I find it amazing given that the race was already pretty much set in stone anyway. What are we really missing by ending this two laps early? I mean, that wasn't pretty, to say the least.
In fact, if anything, Winnie was doing us a bit of a service because, this race was done about 20 laps ago.
20?
This race, it just basically turned into a one-stopper when everybody was just like, oh, buddy, maybe Red Bull can do something with starting on Hypersoft tires. Nope, they're just switching over to Supersofts just like everybody else. And this is becoming a one-stop race. And, we're kind of done here.
Yeah, it turns out that I think she was told by one of the FIA employees that wave the flag the next time the red car comes back round. Unfortunately, she confused Sebastian Vettel for Kimi Raikkonen. Whoops. And because of the rule book, if the checkered flag is thrown, that's the end of the race. Yep. So, technically, that race was over at lap 68 rather than lap 70. Whoops. All I'm saying is that if you're that employee, run. Do not pass Montreal. Do not pass Quebec. Do not collect go. Do not pass. Not collect $200. Run.
Do not try and purchase tickets to an Expos game because,
So yeah, all I say to anyone that was giving Winnie Harlow shit like that was her fault, fuck you. Seriously, what are you guys getting so mad about? Really? This is Twitter where we get mad over everything. Seriously, what is wrong with you people?
People got riled up when Winnie Harlow pretty much just admitted, I'm just here to hang out with Lewis Hamilton. Yeah, that's cool. You will live your best life, Winnie. Be friends with Lewis. Have fun in the paddock and enjoy yourself. It's a fun time.
Yeah, you know what was weird about that? You know who I saw who was one of the people who was criticizing that interview with Winnie Harlow and talking about how, you know, she was there to hang out with Lewis? TNA Wrestling SoCal Val, and I'm like, whoa. It's a small world out there, people. It's a small world. Basically, she accused Winnie of basically, like, being rude to the interviewer and whatnot, even though the interviewer, I'm not sure if it was Brundle, if it was somebody else.
Oh, yeah, it was Brundle who once referred to the Toronto Raptors center as Serge Ibaka.
Anyway, you know, I think the awkward line question was regarding whether Harlow had a partner or not, or was there to eye up the drivers, and I'm just like, deep sighs.
All I can say is that, well, I certainly can't imagine why people would have so much vitriol towards a woman of color celebrity in a Formula One paddock.
Never.
Would never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, and it's been pointed out by many people on the internet that as well, that why wasn't there any shit for Chris Hemsworth who got the green flag wrong at the Indy 500, or Pelé who accidentally waved the checkered flag for the person that finished in third. There's been a long line of this, people, but yet we throw shade at Winnie Harlow. I can't possibly imagine the difference as to why that is. Way to go, internet. Way to go. That's all I'm saying. Like, you guys are as predictable as ever. You pretentious pricks. Right.
As predictable as this race?
Yeah, sadly. Which has caused yet another predictable reaction from many fans. It's like, oh no, this race was terrible. It's absolutely trash. Yada yada yada. I have to talk about this because I mentioned this. I think it was 3 years ago during the 2015 Canadian Grand Prix, and I remember it well because I remember doing a podcast on it. I think it was me, King, and our Bike Live chum Lewis Sutterby. This was ages ago. It was Lewis that had a very rare Monday off. He never gets them off at work, poor guy. That was a thing, and I remember distinctly, like, I think it was Jake Humphrey who was leading the charge, talking about, well, besides him just being a bit of a tit as usual, just talking about, you know, this nature about pushing the cars and driver limits, and this time it was ex-Matty G leading that charge, and I'm just like, oh, here we go. The WTF1 guys kicked off again. I looked at that and I just went, so basically you guys don't want team radio anymore, because this whole idea about car management is not a new thing. It really isn't. This whole idea about tire management is not a new thing. You guys asked for this last year after the tires were too durable and everybody complained about there was too many one-stoppers. Now, I would argue there is probably still too many one-stoppers, but Pirelli have tried to respond by having tyres that have more of a cliff and having more compounds to try and mix up the racing. Now, don't get me wrong, it hasn't really worked, if I'm being honest, but it's not through lack of trying. We know the regulations are garbage, but I honestly sit here as an F1 fan and I say, have you ever watched a Grand Prix, probably with a hand down your pants, saying, you know what this race needs? It needs Lewis Hamilton to push to the absolute limit. You know, I want him to be barely able to stand when he's done because he's that physically exhausted. And I'm just like, for fuck's sake, people, are we still doing this? It is 2018. How is this still a thing? Like, King, are we so balls deep in aesthetics now that it's like, anything other than 100% pushing, which has always been a myth in modern day F1, people just lose their minds.
No, it's like, well, if the racing's not gonna be good, I might as well have it be like as like visually appealing as possible.
Yeah.
Though people think that having it be visually appealing means the race is gonna get better, and
there's no guarantee. Won't. Yeah, there's no guarantee on that either.
Because remember, We tried this when we went to the wider tires and more aggressive aero to be more flat out and all out racing.
Faster lap times, lap records were tumbling left, right, and center, and then we realized, oh wait, this adds a shit ton of downforce. They can't follow each other. Whoops.
And not just, it's the best kind of downforce, the one that creates turbulent air behind the cars so you can't really follow.
But RJ, the cars look nice.
They,
I
They do. The cars look very nice. They just race like crap.
Yeah, I have come to the thorough conclusion, and look, this is my message to all F1 fans that are watching. Your perfect formula doesn't exist.
Though some of the drivers did have keen words to say, including, like, Lewis Hamilton pretty much said how terrible the cars were.
He said the cars were crap, yeah.
Yeah.
Would he be saying that if he had won, though?
Of course he wouldn't. He'd be talking about Canada has the best fans in the world, you know, the usual.
No, he'd be talking about, oh, this is not a big deal, you know, just go watch the World Cup, they're going to have some boring matches too.
Was that a shot, King? Was that a shot?
No, it was a shot. It was a shot.
Sit down, freaking Captain Second Place over there. Like, get back over there and polish your silver medals. Just because you're mad. The Americans aren't in the World Cup.
There are many shots in the FIFA World Cup, which starts this weekend, and it will have already started by the time you listen to this. And Saudi Arabia is already eliminated from round of 16 contention.
Yes, please, get excited about the highly non-political matchup of Russia versus Saudi Arabia. Go on, King, whip out your popcorn, sit down and enjoy that footballing extravaganza. Please.
That's fine. You don't have to, because at least during, like, the group stage of the World Cup, you can flip on some other game. There's probably one playing at the same time as that. You don't have to watch the boring one.
For the record, they only do two matches at the same time in the last round of group games. It's one at a time for the first basically 2 weeks. But hey, you know, don't let me stop you from enjoying Panama. Like, if you want to enjoy Panama play football, then God power, more power to you. That's what I say.
That's a very good Van Halen song. I think I will very much enjoy it.
Yes. But yeah, Lewis Hamilton called the cars crap, which is completely not surprising because he didn't win. Sorry, that's just how it is. It's one of these things like, oh, well, now you want to criticize the cars. I see. Listen, no one is saying these cars are great. They look nice. They are very fast, in relatively speaking, for F1 cars, and it's very cool. They've got 1,000 horsepower and whatnot. I'm not denying that. I'm a petrol head, and I'm a car nut, and I think they are awesome marvels of technology. They don't produce good racing. These cars have not produced good racing for a good 2 or 3 years now, at least.
Though your boy Sebastian Vettel says it's short-sighted to be complaining about the cars.
And I think my boy is wrong, badly wrong on this occasion.
Yes,
like, I'm not, listen. Just because I support Sebastian doesn't mean he exonerates him from like bullshit. I'm not denying that. That was not.
Just because I am the resident Alonso stan does not think that I believe that everybody should be entitled to a Monaco Grand Prix refund. Because one, I mean, hell, that's a $20 ticket, and you make more money than you know what to do with.
He'd probably
spend it five times over.
He's too busy trying to remove Graham Rahal's lips from his arse after trying to get him back into IndyCar on Twitter.
Would that be a good segue into our next part of this episode?
Yeah. I'll run down the results real quick. Sebastian Vettel wins his 50th career Grand Prix, 7.3 seconds ahead of Valtteri Bottas in second, as mentioned, his fourth second place of the year. That's the only step of the podium he's actually been on so far this season. No thirds, no wins, just seconds. It's a good way to go. I call it the Valentino Rossi strategy. Also worth mentioning, that was Ferrari's first win in Canada since 2004.
Back when the Expos still technically existed. Mm-hmm. And were just about to be shipped out to Washington, D.C.
Yep. Congratulations to Max Verstappen, who finished in third. Quote, unquote, he silenced those critics by basically finishing exactly where he started. Good for him. Daniel Ricciardo in fourth, a long way back of his teammate, surprisingly. 12 seconds behind Verstappen in the end. Ricciardo just didn't have it today. He narrowly beat Lewis Hamilton over the line for fifth. Kimi Raikkonen, a strange 27 seconds behind his teammate in sixth. Then it's a totally second race. Like, winner of the B race, Nico Hülkenberg in seventh place. Another solid result for him and the Renault boys in seventh and eighth. Esteban Ocon limped to ninth. Charles Leclerc rounds off the points in tenth ahead of Pierre Gasly. A solid job from Romain Grosjean to get back to 12th after starting from the back of the field. Kevin Magnussen in 13th place ahead of Checo, Marcus Ericsson, Stoffel Van Dorn, Sergei Sorokin, and three DNFs. Fernando Alonso having an exhaust failure, as mentioned, and of course the other Hartley Stroll contact on the opening lap. Quick look at the championship standings, and yeah, as mentioned, Sebastian Vettel back on top of the championship with 121 points. He's a point ahead of Lewis Hamilton as we are further away into the season on 120. Valtteri Bottas are now 35 off the top. He's overtaken Daniel Ricciardo into third place now on 86. Daniel Ricciardo himself is on 84 and Kimi Raikkonen on 68. And the constructors, Merckx, only minimal damage. Apparently the whole factory back in Brackley is been on the grass again because they're panicking. Saying a massive shock to the system that they finished only second and fifth. Toto, we don't believe you. You need more people. They lost a whopping 5 points in the Constructors' battle to Ferrari, which they still lead by 17 points on 206 to Ferrari's 189. Red Bull kind of in no man's land now on 134. Renault still in fourth on 56. And McLaren hanging on in there with 40 points in fifth place. Next up, Paul Ricard in a fortnight's time. The return of the French Grand Prix, and King will be opening next week's show with the French national anthem. Good luck with that one, King.
The granddaddy of them all is back. Hashtag granddaddy of them all.
Grand Prix racing is back home.
We should spell it like it's like a granddaddy of a mall, like it's a shopping mall. with 50% occupancy, and what's it? The Sears is shut down. I mean, granted, that's kind of par for the course these days.
But there's a Cinnabon, and the Cinnabon never dies.
But the Cinnabon is delicious. Right. After this quick musical break, we'll be back to talk about IndyCar and the DXC Tech 600 at Texas. Everything is bigger here, folks. And yeah, welcome back to Texas Motor Speedway.
Welcome back to IndyCar After Dark, especially for our UK viewers, because you had to stay for a long time. Some people just decided, right, I don't even want to forego this.
No, and I was one of those people. I was like, you know what, I'm not staying up till 5 in the morning to watch an IndyCar race. I can't do this. I just don't have it in me. Okay, I just don't. It's I can't do this, people. It's just not fun. Oh, thanks, Henry, for telling me in the Discord it was only 4 in the morning. Thanks a bunch, mate. That really makes me feel better about my decision. Where to go, man? Where to go? World class, sir. World class. Right. So talking about Texas for a minute, and this was a fun one if your name is Scott Dixon, because Scott Dixon, who is always there, just dominated this one, really. Led almost half the laps in play, led 119 in total. Like, I love that John Meekis came out and said, Dixon, to this point in the season, before Texas, had only led 39 laps this season. In total, going into this round, he can add another 119 to that, as well as his second win of the season and his third win overall in Texas. And King, it was like after Dixon got to the front, no one could stop him.
Yep, because everything in Texas is bigger except the groove.
Right. Yeah, he took the lead for the first time, a lap 130. And then just kind of parked it there for the rest of the race.
Indeed.
We should also mention that this was a milestone win for Scott Dixon, who is still just 37 years old. This is now win number 43 through 18 seasons. He's just passed Michael Andretti for third on the all-time list.
Indeed.
Which means he's now only behind AJ Foyt and Mario Andretti.
That's incredible. That's scary. And knowing
that. Yeah, and consider the fact that, especially in the days of AJ Foyt, they ran more races, and Foyt raced a long-ass time. AJ Foyt didn't retire until he was in his mid-50s. Same with Mario Andretti. Scott Dixon is 37. You know, if he even realistically, goes to his 40s,
He could be at least second all-time in career wins. I think he'll pass Mario. I don't know if he'll get to Voit, but he'll come alarmingly close.
I think there's definitely a chance. Because if you're Dixon, why would you retire? Like, the IndyCar schedule is still pretty light. He's still in excellent shape. He's still one of, if not the best pound-for-pound driver in the series. Like, why would you...
He pretty much has a lifetime contract at Ganassi if he wants it.
Yep, and the pancakes are delicious. but, you know, get him at IHOP, what I still named IHOP. But, yeah, like, Dixon pretty much led the second half of the race from start to finish with very little interruptions in between. Just another magnificent oval performance from him there. There was a few stories up and down the field during this race, and I have to say, because I know he's another one of King's boys, but I am very glad that Simon Pagenaud finally caught a break. A positive one.
Thank God.
And finished in second, because he's been strong at every oval. I think he's qualified on the front row of every single oval race so far this season. So Pagenaud finally catches a break, and King, I'm guessing you were delighted.
Yep. Man, I thought I was hoping that Indianapolis would be, you know, Pagenaud's time, but it wasn't. It clearly wasn't.
Nope, not this time.
And I thought this entire year was going to be a write-off, but it really looks like things are improving.
Yeah, this was his first podium of the season, after all. And wow. That's frightening to think about, considering in some of these races, he probably should have won them.
Yeah, I mean, it's not been entirely his fault. I know, like, Graham Rahal and the incident at Long Beach certainly didn't help. He's just had some wretched luck across the board. Shout out to him as well. He probably had the best overall fight of the race. Him and Alex Rossi going toe-to-toe on several occasions during the race, and Pagenaud narrowly coming out on top in that battle, beating Alex Rossi. And Alex Rossi, once again, in the top three. He's not going away, King. He's doing an incredible job this season, leading that Andretti team.
Yeah, I fear when Rossi really gets in that mode where he becomes a dominant driver, because he's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody was having their eyeballs locked into that 27 car for, like, some of these
yes.
final restarts, because they knew after Indianapolis they were going to be looking at him to do one thing only, and that's try and pass on the high side.
Yeah, and what was Alex Rossi doing? Trying to pass on the high side. With varying degrees of success. But Alex Rossi is terrifyingly good. Don't tell Connors. But he is terrifyingly good. It's scary how he is this good. He's still only 26. With plenty of years in front of him. And he is becoming as good an all-rounder in the series as you get. I think he is... God damn it, Zoe. just got to say, like, God, Dre's praising him. I'm not even that big a fan of Alex Rossi, and I'm out here praising the shit out of him. That's how you know how crazy it's gotten. But, he's still a little bit loose when it comes to the road and track stuff, but it's minor nitpicks here. He is an elite driver in this series, and he is quickly becoming an absolutely terrifying all-rounder. And like I said,
there's no Eli Manning or Joe Flacco debates. Alexander Rossi is hashtag elite.
Yes, he's gone the full Matt Ryan. I'm very proud of him for that one. So that was one of the, like we mentioned Pagenaud a minute ago. It was he was the lucky one of the three Penske's on this occasion during this race. The other two, not so fun. Joseph, I hate to say it, Joseph, but defending the one is starting to slip. This was not a good weekend for Joseph. I mean, Joseph, he had the pole position. It was a brilliant run to put him on pole in Texas, and it just didn't happen for him. A lot of tire issues.
A lot of tire issues. I'm not going to say that right front tire was looking bad. I was just saying that a slick tire like that should not have had grooves cut in like it's a late 90s Formula One tire.
Yeah, that was... That was not pretty. That was like watching like a 2000s F1 car of the grooves that were being cut in the banking. As Henry points out in the Discord, they always seem to have tyre issues on high banked ovals, and this was no exception. Pagano had his struggles in the early going as well, but it was much faster on the stickier tyres. Because that was the story of the race going into the weekend. There was concerns about tyre issues going in, and IndyCar told the teams, you're going to have to scuff 4 sets of tyres and run those 4 sets of tyres during the race itself before you can put any new sticker tyres on, basically. So, yeah, it was a slippy one, and then to top it off for Newgarden, to make a bad day even worse, he jumps the final restart and is given a 2-lap penalty, dropping him all the way to 13th in the end. RJ, it's looking precarious for Newgarden in this championship now.
We're still halfway through it. He's coming to some good tracks. Iowa's good for him. Toronto's usually pretty good for him. Gateway was especially good.
Oh, yeah.
It's not over yet, but he's got to stop the skid, because ever since winning at Barber, 11th, 8th, 9th, 15th, 13th, I mean...
It's not good enough.
It's not terrible, but that's not good enough.
It's not good enough for the championship to retain, and yeah, that's... I know Newgarden complained about it after the race, saying, well, if they're going to be more aggressive on this and when it comes to jumping restarts, then I hope they're more consistent about it going forward. So I hope he's right, but dare I say it, RJ, a little bit of salt from your man's there.
It was just tough. I mean, my attention was divided a little bit during that race. Because it kind of felt like it certainly wasn't the anxiety bound like pack racing that we'd saw. People had very divided opinions on this. People said, "Oh, this is great. This is what oval racing should be like, because pack racing in these kinds of cars is stupid." And the other camp is just like, "No, I miss my pack racing. It's so great to have these fun finishes." See, I don't know if this is unpopular opinion or not, but I've seen a lot of bad wrecks from the IndyCar series of past at tracks like this, in that kind of pack racing, where I'm just like, I think this is a worthy sacrifice. If you spread out the cars more, and hey, there were still opportunities to race and pass and get momentum coming out of corners.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So it wasn't like you just couldn't pass. It just wasn't like you were trying to stage a Daytona plate race on open wheel cars that really aren't suited or meant to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got the balance right with the aero kits for this particular race. I mean, scorching hot take, I didn't enjoy 75% of the Indy 500 this year for that very reason. The cars were just a little bit too spread out, and it was hard to gain ground on other cars, and probably a little bit too hard to overtake outside of restarts. Here, they got it right. I mean, and if you really think they didn't get it right, think back to last year's essential pack race finale, where it was just cars running side by side everywhere, and it was terrifying to watch. And of course, we had that massive wreck with maybe later Sato from last year, which, you know, caused Emma Davis Dixon to flip a shit. But yeah, compared that to last year, I would much rather have this than last year's shit show. Pack racing is not fun. It's not pretty. It's excessively dangerous, in my opinion. And I think we got a pretty good Texas race overall as a result, so I'm not complaining about this one. Yeah. I thought it was a good race.
It was...
unless you're AJ Foyt.
well, I was a fan of the style of racing, but it's going to be forever hard for me to be a fan of the style of driving, where on any of the onboards, pretty much an ideal lap around Texas was you lift going into turn one, and then you're flat out around the rest of the track.
Yeah. Why aren't you a big fan of that, King?
Because there's literally, like, there's no braking. It's pretty much, theoretically, if you're low on fuel, you can go flat out the entire lap. You don't have to touch the brake pedal at all.
True. I can see why that might be a problem. It was certainly problems for other guys in the field. Sadly, I have to denounce a nickname on this show. A lot of people are a fan of a certain oval driver, an oval master, shall we say, in Ed Carpenter. For some reason, people insist on calling him Dad. He is no longer Dad. He is now Deadbeat Dad. Because Ed Carpenter...
Dad's been dipping into the fuzzies again.
Deadbeat Dad has missed a child support payment. He did not give space to Robert Wickens on the low side, and Ed Carpenter collects Robert Wickens' lunch money, and it wasn't fun.
That was a race Robert Wickens could have won.
Wickens was on fire again. Wickens led a good 30 plus laps of this race. I'm just getting the example. It was 31. He led 31 laps of the race. He was on track for at least a podium. And just collected over the top by Carpenter, who just seemed to lose shape and then just collect Wickens from underneath him. A real
and
shame.
And fair play to Carpenter that he, admitted that he messed that one up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, sad times for AJ Foyt Racing. Remember, we alluded to this earlier. Just a handful of laps in, Matthias Laist decided that, he wanted things to get lit. And boy howdy, his car just caught fire.
In as one does, like he thought, let me bring the barbecue to Texas Motor Speedway, and basically bailed out after a whole 2 minutes of running. His car catches fire, and sadly, Tony Kanaan joined him about 20 minutes later when he made contact with the wall, and that was the end of his day.
It didn't seem like it was a substantial hit, but it did enough to just throw the suspension all out of line. So yeah, in a race where Tony Kanaan could have won it, AJ Foyt finishes last and second to last.
Yeah.
Somewhere out there, Elizabeth Wirth is just casually tossing away a banana peel, rubbing her hands together and just thinking, yes, this is good.
This is, yeah, a delicious banana indeed for our friend Lizzie. Yeah, and there was one other big incident as well, and this one had big championship permutations as Will Power, who was running up the front of the field, did not see one Zachary Clackery DeMackery coming around the outside, and next thing you know, there's no more space, and next thing you know, both of them are out.
Both of them are out. DeMello was having a good race, too.
He was?
Yeah.
He was solidly up in the top six. Again, this is only his second oval start?
Yeah.
In an Indy car.
We've taken the piss out of this man and his audacious shoes on several occasions, but the man can drive, I'll give him that. I mean, Jesus. Another solid performance there. I mean, this really was the race of the rookie. I mean, Wickens was very impressive. Zachary Clackery DeMackery was impressive. Zach Veach.
Pour one out for Zach Veach as well, because he was charging through the field, and then... goodness, I can't even remember what happened to his car, but he just fell away really, really fast.
Indeed, yeah, he hit the wall.
My favorite commentary call of the race is when Veach throws it around the outside in turn one, and the entire commentary booth is, oh my god, it's Ryan Hunter Ray! and then they realize, oh, it's the rookie Zach Veach. When you're indistinguishable from an oval veteran, man, you're going to have a good future in the series.
Zach, you've made it. You've made it. Our smallest IndyCar racer, small spell S-M-O-L. He was having a great drive until he made contact with the wall and he lost ground. He lost a handful of laps. He ended up finishing I think it was 10 laps down.
16th.
In 16th place. Unfortunate for that one. But, yep, here is the results of the DXC Technology 600. Thankfully, an IndyCar race that measures in actual units rather than American.
Oh, my God.
Stick to a proper measuring system, King. Scott Dixon winning by just over 4.5 seconds in the end from Simon Pagenaud in second. Alex Rossi on the podium in third. My boy, James Hinchcliffe in fourth. Plus 11 places from where he started. Attaboy, James. That's better. much better from James Hinchcliffe there. Insert engineering joke here. I will happily take that. Ryan Hunter-Reay in fifth. Another strong result for me. Nice to see Hunter-Reay back on form, if you ask me. Sneakily, Graham Rahal is refusing to go away. He started almost stone dead last in 20th place. Gains 14 places, led 5 laps, and finishes in 6th. Graham Rahal is a pest. He refuses to leave the top 10, no matter where he ends up. Unless he puts it in the wall, Rahal is going to sneak in and get these little solid results as the season goes on. It's ridiculous. So yeah, Graham Rahal in 6th there, very surprised. Ahead of his teammate Takuma Sato in 7th, Sebastian Bourdais in 8th place, ahead of Ed Jones in 9th. Well done, Charlie Kimball, to sneak into the top 10 there. Last man off the lead lap, a lap down. But in the top 10 again for Carlin. Good result for them. The draconian hashtag might have to go with the rate he's going, unfortunately.
He's now back to serviceable.
Serviceable Kimball is back. Yes. Congratulations, Charlie. Don't fuck it up. Spencer Pigot in 11th for Red Carpenter, ahead of Max Chilton. We mentioned Joseph Newgarden in 13th place. After his penalties, Marco Andretti in 14th place ahead of Gabby Chavez. Zach Veach in 16th, again, lost laps after hitting the wall. Clayman DeMello in 17th after his wall contact with Will Power in 18th. Wickens 19th, as mentioned, collected by Ed Carpenter in 20th position. And again, the two AJ Foyt cars at the back of the field. Tony Kanaan in 21st place and Matt Leist in 22nd. His race lasted a whopping 132 seconds. Not bad for an oval. Right, looking at the IndyCar Championship standings real quick before we get out of here. Scott Dixon, again, extends his lead at the top of the championship now to 23 points over Alex Rossi. Will Power, just after his bad day at the office, slips to third on 321. Ryan Hunter-Reay is creeping into title contention. He's up into fourth now on 308. Ahead of Joseph Newgarden, who sinks to fifth on 289. Graham Rahal refuses to go away in sixth place on 250. Still with an outside chance of winning the title, if you ask me. Robert Wickens down to seventh on 244. Simon Pagenaud into the top 10 on 229. Shout out to King. His Frenchman side-by-side is in 9th, Sebastian Bourdais on 218. And Marco Andretti still rounds off the top 10 on 213. 4 points ahead of his best buddy, James Hinchcliffe. IndyCar back in 2 weeks' time for the Collar Grand Prix at Road America. One of my favourites. I can't wait. That's going to be lit. That's going to be a fun one. And I think that will just about do it for this early part of the podcast. We kept this one real short, just 67 minutes or so. That's going to be a fun one for you to edit, Lewis. Enjoy. But basically, you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter @motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow us personally, we are @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, and @RJOConnell. You know the drill. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live. Don't forget, Bike Live 63 is up right now. 64 will be out later this week on World Superbikes in Brno. And check back later this week for the second part of this doubleheader taping as we get into Formula E at Zurich, the first motorsport event in Switzerland for 64 years. And of course, everyone's favourite Lucas Degrassi dominated. Great. More of that and a absolutely massive Le Mans preview for this upcoming weekend. The biggest race in the world, depending on which Fernando Alonso you ask. That should be great indeed. Until next time, I've been Andre Harrison, they've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell. And until next time, thanks for listening. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.